Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be. Good evening. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Yes.
Good.
So have you got some good questions for us?
I do. Tonight we're going to focus on dictation.
Okay.
Learning
perfect.
About dictation.
It's my favorite topic.
I've heard. Okay. So my first question is, let's just start off really simple. What is dictation?
Okay. So if you looked up a dictionary definition of dictation, what it would mean is basically somebody saying something to somebody else and that person getting that information down. Okay, so a boss might dictate to a secretary, and the secretary might take it down in shorthand, or they might be typing it, or they might just be writing it out, you know, in their handwriting. So basically it means that somebody is saying something, somebody else is copying it out, right? What they're hearing. Okay, so we think about like a dictation app, say, is going to take your voice and turn it into text, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about in terms of the big picture of dictation. What we're talking about in educating our kids in dictation, there would be slightly different variations on the definition of dictation and how it would look. So we'll talk about that. I'm sure that'll come up in the questions. But essentially, I'm saying something, reading something out loud, either a poem, prose, scripture. It could even be something out of a science book, and my kids are writing it down as I'm saying it. Okay. So that's basically what we mean by dictation.
Okay.
Yeah. So not different than copy work, right? Because copy work, they're actually looking at it. Here they're listening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then next question would be, what is the importance of dictation?
Okay. So I think that the importance of dictation ultimately is the fact that you are giving the child an opportunity to look at language close up, right? Kind of in a sense, put it under a microscope, okay? And have a look at the aspects of language. And from a very young age, that's going to be things as simple as, you know, how to make a letter, what sound a letter makes, okay? You know, and then the whole range up to sort of what did the poet mean by this phrase? Okay. So having an opportunity to take language and put it under a microscope and in order to draw lessons out of it. So I think that's the big advantage to dictation in terms of learning language arts. With copy work, you're going to get some people often say, is copy work the same? And I really, really don't think it is, because first of all, dictation is going to be guided. Okay, so the adult with the resources is going to have opportunity to talk to the child about what the language means, what the letter sounds are, you know, so it's not just mirroring something. Okay, it's guiding you through something.
Okay, so my first question about that would be, how slow do you go? I know with my son with spelling, part of his test is I dictate a sentence and he has to write it down.
Right.
And I tend to repeat it a lot, and I'm not sure that's what I'm supposed to do. Is it supposed to be, you know, one or two times and then they're supposed to have it after that, or
right.
as many time as they need time?
So this is going to be a very age dependent, skill dependent, question, right?
Okay.
So basically I go as slow as necessary and give them all the help that they need in order to have it done correctly.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say the whole sentence to a 7-year-old, probably. I'm probably with a little tiny kid, I'm only going to give them probably one word at a time, even one letter at a time. So usually what I would do is say we were doing the poem, Robert Louis Stevenson, A Child Should Always Say What's True and Speak mm-hmm. When He Is Spoken To.
Oh, yeah.
So say we decided to do that, I might read it first. Okay, this is what we're going to do for the next few days. A child should always say what's true and speak when he is spoken to. And then if they're a pre-reader, I'm actually going to be guiding through the making of every letter, probably. They might know some of their letters, but if I need to, I'm going to say, okay, well, this starts with A, the word A, it's only one letter long, and do you know how to make an A? And they're going to say yes or no. And I'm probably going to know, but if I want them to try, or I think they would like to try, then I'm going to ask them, well, this is going to be a capital A because it's the beginning of the sentence, beginning of the poem. So you're going to go straight up to this point and then straight down. I might even make dots so they can follow them, you know, depending on their skill level. If they have a hard time or get frustrated making a line like that, I might even put dots on their dictation book so they can actually just trace the dots. We're going to go up, we're going to go down, and we're going to go across. And that's A, and that says A. Child. So child's kind of a tricky word, right? So I might say, you know, do you have any idea how to spell child with a young child? And they probably aren't going to know. So I'm going to say, well, the sound ch is made by a C and an H together. So it's actually two letters. So do you know how to make a C? Okay. With a little bit older child, I say I'm doing the same poem. You could do the same passage for any child at any age, really. Excuse me. So if I say, okay, so the first two words are a child, okay, and they know where to put the space and they know to capitalize the beginning, maybe in excuse me, if they don't, then I'm going to prompt them, right? Remember, it's a beginning of a sentence, beginning of the line of poetry, so you capitalize. And then say, child, do you know what makes the ch sound? And they might say ch. And then I say, yeah, okay, so child. And then do you know how to spell the rest of child? Okay, so I'm feeding them very slowly. Mm-hmm. Of course, with a, you know, a 10-year-old, you're going to say the first line is, you know, I throw out 10 as a number. If a 10 is a very, you know, tentative reader, you're not going to just throw the whole line at them and expect them to do it. You're going to have to be reading that child really carefully. So a child should always say what's true. And as they're writing it, I'm going to be saying, you know, do you know how to spell all those words? If there's any words that you're not sure how to spell, ask me, or you could just try it and then we'll can correct it if you write it down incorrectly. And so that's, you know, so that's how it's going to be. With an older child, I might be able to give them a couple of sentences at a time. It would be rare that I would do more than a sentence or two at a time, right?
Okay. Okay. So my immediate question is, what about for somebody, my 8-year-old is just terrible at spelling. And so my first thought is, I don't want to give him the answer. But it sounds like what you do is you do help them spell and in a way give them the answer. So do you find that, I mean, for an 8-year-old and even 10 or 11, telling them how a word is spelled is still as helpful as if, you know, they figured it out on their own? Does that make sense?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I think it's more helpful because when we, okay, I'm going to use times tables as an example of this. Okay, when we're learning times tables, I remember when I was a kid getting a sheet of times tables and we would do, you know, 20 questions or whatever every day. And I would write down the answer. And the ones I knew. But the ones I was uncertain about, often I would write down the same answer that I got wrong the day before because it's kind of been implanted in my brain, right? Because I wrote down, you know, 40 yesterday. So I'm going to write down 40 again today, but I can't remember. Was that the wrong answer? Or the right? I don't remember now, you know? And so we're kind of cementing things in our brain that we really shouldn't. And so if that's one of the problems with sort of the test format of teaching children, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and particularly about these little things, the spelling's pretty random, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of spelling rules, but there's so many words that break the rules,
right?
You know, and so if we just say them and they repeatedly over the course of, you know, 7 or 8 years of dictation, my goodness, even a year of dictation, you're going to cover so much, you know, and if you can, you can bring in little lessons. Like I would say, 2 to 3 lessons per dictation lesson, that you're going to pull out a couple of lessons. Now, for a little kid, that might just be, what do those two letters say together? For an older kid, it might be, you know, the word children is, we kind of say it children. You know, we have a tendency to run the letters together. But if you'll notice, as you're writing it down, it's actually C-H-I-L-D-R-E-N. That's how we spell it, children. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, just pulling it out, writing it down on the other side of the paper, just talking about it for a minute is often enough to help the child just remember that's how you spell children. And, you know, just discussing that we don't say children, we don't say it like it's spelled, but that is how it's spelled. And there's lots of words like that. You might pull out another one that's similar, you know, this is kind of a tricky word to spell because, mm-hmm. and so let's just talk about it for a minute. Okay. So the formation that happens is much friendlier mm-hmm. than the testing kind of idea.
Right.
And it also doesn't get the child's guard up. Okay. And it's remarkable because I always thought that I'm a good speller. I always have been a good speller. I always thought that it was because I was a reader. And it turns out that being a reader does not guarantee that you're a good speller. Okay. I think that what makes you a good speller is, being attentive, you know, being attentive to what's going on there. And really it's just random bits of information. So, you know, we, if we guide them through that, you know, yeah. the same way we guide our kids to, you know, how to wash their hands properly. You know, there's just steps and you have to take them and testing them on that wouldn't really help them learn it any better.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. So do you do dictation as sort of, in place of a spelling curriculum?
Dictation takes the place of all the language arts curriculum.
Okay.
Right. Up until independent writing.
Okay.
So, you know, anything that a child would learn via, whatever other language arts program, it can be learned inherently in dictation because you just pull it out as lessons, but it's much more natural. It's much more, contextual.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because again, a kid can memorize spelling words and actually not know how to spell those words.
Right.
Right? It might stick, but it might not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the opportunity to just look at the words and I tend to not make dictation something that we, I don't hammer spelling with it. It's okay. just part of the little lesson that we do, right?
Okay.
Do you know how to spell that word? You know, how do you think it's spelled? Can you say it out loud for me? Oh, okay. You spelled it actually with a K. It's actually a C, right? Okay. So that's something to remember. Some words, and then I'd write down a little list like, oh yeah, see all these words? They start with a C and that says a K sound, and these words start with a K that says a K sound. Some of that we just have to memorize,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, yeah. You know, but here's an example of a few things. So the kid starts asking the question, oh, this word starts with a K. Is that a C or a K?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're starting to be aware that there's information out there that they need to get down correctly, right?
Okay. So yeah. For somebody like myself, I could tell you what an adjective is, but I struggle with more adverbs, verbs, which
yeah.
without a curriculum guide to follow, how do you know when to teach that and how, you know,
right.
through dictation?
Right. Okay. Well, I think a couple of things. One is that I would recommend, there's a really good book that we have called the Usborne Book of Grammar and Punctuation, I believe.
I love Usborne books.
Yeah, it's a good book. And so I used to have a dictionary that had all the grammar and punctuation rules in the front of the dictionary. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would use as a reference, right? So that's another way of doing that is having something like a book that you can look up. Okay. When do we need to, it's not going to tell you specifically when you need to introduce what an adverb and a verb are or any other part of speech. But it is going to tell you what the parts of speech are. So most of our homeschooling years, I just had a little poster that I put up on the wall that had the parts of speech on it. So
okay.
I never actually set out to, okay, this child needs to learn these parts of speech. I just had it there and we talked about it. Right.
Okay.
So, you know, for example, if I'm focusing on the word children, I might say, you know, do you know, is that a noun or a verb? Children. Right. And so, you know, they might say, oh, I don't know. Or they might, if they're young, they might say, well, what's a noun? Or I might say, do you know what a noun is? And kind of describe what a noun is. If I don't know, right, then I'm going to look it up and I'm going to look it up with them
yeah.
because that's good for kids. That's how they learn how to use resources. When, if I don't know something, look it up. There's also, I've got on my Pinterest page, I've got all kinds of, kind of posters. There's some really super creative moms out there. I'm not very creative, but there's so many moms out there that are. You used to be able to buy little posters with, you know, punctuation and parts of speech and all that stuff from school stores, which you still can. But there's so many free resources that just moms have designed or teachers have designed. And so I have a one of my boards is called Dictation Help.
Okay.
And writing help. And I've got a lot of those things pinned there so that people can just go and print it off. You could create your own little binder with all the things that you would need to help your child learn everything about language, right? Okay. And so, you know, just print them off, have them handy, and look them up when necessary, right? Yeah. So, you know, most people are like that. Once you've been through one or two kids, you don't need to do that as much, you know, because you're relearning it. But most of us come out of school not really knowing a lot of that information, right? You know, when do we use a semicolon and how do we punctuate properly and what's the proper use of a hyphen, all that stuff. You know, we can't be expected to know that. But when we're talking about it contextually, it makes so much more sense. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look at this. This poet put a hyphen there. Why? Right? What was the point of that? You know, this writer has used a semicolon. He could have used a period and started a new sentence there. I wonder why he didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, punctuation is pretty subjective, right? So it's one of those things that it gives us pause for just talking about why they did it a certain way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a question and it has flown away.
It'll come back.
Right. Right. Okay. So what are some common challenges with dictation and how do you overcome them?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge is what we were just talking about, that the mom doesn't feel adequate because she doesn't know, the spelling rules, the grammar rules, you know, so I would just encourage moms to just be really grateful for the opportunity to be learning things alongside your child. That's good for both of you, right? And it's much, much easier to learn in context. So I would say that's the thing that I hear the most from moms is, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, right? But it's okay. It's okay not to know what you're doing because we can, there's resources and we can learn, you know, and it's not hard things to learn. Some people might be concerned that when they're doing dictation with their child, that they, that what if the child isn't cooperative? Okay. First of all, if you've been homeschooling and the child has been doing a grammar program and in a writing program and they've been journaling and they've been doing a spelling program and all that stuff, if you say, you know, we're actually just going to do 1 5-minute lesson every day. And instead of all that stuff, you know, there's the odd kid who likes that, but most don't. Okay. Mm-hmm. Most kids are pretty happy about that. Okay. So that's not usually an issue. But the other thing is that if you have a child who's not cooperative, you know, that's often sort of a relational challenge, right? Mm-hmm. But dictation's very cozy. It's something that should be cozy. It's not a test. It's a cozy moment to sit down together and look at language and discover what there is to know about language while I'm sitting here being cozy with you. Okay. So if you start it, most people are going to find that that's actually working really well. And that most kids are very cooperative about that. If they're having a particularly bad day, you know, there's no point in trying to do anything with an uncooperative child. Right. You know, so probably one of the biggest challenges is getting one-on-one time with each child. Right. And, you know, being nice while you have your 5 minutes that you're working with your child. Right.
Right.
You know, if you can't be nice for 5 minutes, do it later. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing to remember. Sit down and it's time to be nice. This is supposed to be a nice experience and we learn better, in a loving environment. So, you know, we should look loving. but so how do we get that one-on-one time? You know, is perhaps the bigger challenge there. You know, often I would have a toddler sitting on my lap or when I did dictation. So one-on-one was sometimes two-on-one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I found to be the easiest thing to do in terms of being able to work efficiently one-on-one was during that 5-10 minutes that was working one-on-one with one child, have an older child watch the little one. So, of course, this doesn't work if you've only got small kids. Mm-hmm. But have somebody just, you know, can you keep the toddler busy for 5 or 10 minutes while I work with this person? Mm-hmm. But don't make it oppressive for them, right?
Right.
Just, you know, can you guys go play Play-Doh, or can you guys have a little snack, or whatever? And, you know, ideally that gives you that, just that few minutes, but it's very short. So it's not oppressive to you or the child that you're doing dictation with, or the person who's helping out, right? Sometimes you have to be creative. If you only have little kids, and you know, it's very hard to find that sort of one-on-one time. First of all, corralling your kids is really helpful. If you can have it so that they're all stuck in one room so that you can at least keep an eye on them, mm-hmm. while you're doing one-on-one, that's a really helpful thing to be able to actually get something done and not worry about, you know, where the other kids are running off to, right, or getting into.
Yeah.
If you only have small kids. And the thing is, too, is if you only have small kids, let's assume all of your kids are very young and dictation can be very, very short, right? Yeah. So, you know, you can tailor that to your family really well. I would really caution parents about making sure that this is focus time. It's meant to be focus time. It's meant to be very short. Don't get distracted by other things. You know, shut your phone off, put it away somewhere. Don't have it sitting there so that you, oh, I just got to answer this email. Finish that word. I'll just do this. You're teaching your child to attend by attending to them. Okay. And so it's really important, you know, and if we can't leave the phone alone for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, that's a signifies a problem, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, you're waiting for some important call, wait, do dictation when you have 5 minutes together that you're not being distracted, you know, or I'm just going to jump up and throw a few dishes in the dishwasher. You know, really avoid that kind of thing, because we really, the example that we give to kids in our attentiveness with them is so powerful. And if we're being distracted by little things, you know, that's going to make them distractible. Mm-hmm. Right, because that's the example they're being fed. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some really good advice. I'm guilty of that a lot.
It's hard. It's hard, you know, because we're used to our phones being right there all the time.
Right. Right. Well, and when things are happening, like they are now with COVID, yeah. and other stuff going on in the United States, it's hard to separate myself personally.
Yeah.
from what's going on. You know, I've been struggling, especially the last few days, to just attend to my children and only mm-hmm. my children. So that's a really powerful piece of advice you just gave.
Oh, good. Well, I think something too is, first of all, if you shut your dinger off, right? After the 5 minutes, if you really feel starved for your phone, you could go then check it before you did dictation with another child or did, yeah. you know, whatever you needed to do. But also if you know, okay, if it's just a mindset really,
yeah.
okay, for this period of time, whether it's 5 minutes or an hour, I'm focusing on you. My dinger is shut off. My phone is over there. I don't want to see anything flash. I don't want to hear any bells or whistles. And it's very freeing. That's an incredibly freeing thing to know that I can just put my phone away.
Yeah.
Right. You do it at church.
Right.
Right. You know, it's just a daily practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a couple questions as you were talking. One, what ages do you start dictation? I have a 5-year-old who is really catching on to reading, who asks
cool.
to spell. And as you were explaining what you do and what dictation looks like, it sounds like something that he would enjoy and really be, I guess, good at.
Yeah, some of my younger kids started even as early as, you know, 3.5 or 4, because they saw their older siblings doing it. They saw that it was cozy. They wanted to do it. So, you know, I mean, a lot of times, if you just keep your expectations realistic about what that person's actually going to be, able to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, then it can be really fun,
yeah.
right? And so, you know, holding a pencil and making a few letters or a few, you know, shapes without crying, that's probably a good, you know, a good starting place,
yeah.
right? You know, if you're having to, you know, force them to hold a pencil, you know, kids naturally become interested in writing and reading, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the age range is going to be quite big. Like a kid, probably if they weren't interested by the time they were approaching 7, I would probably, you know, be encouraging them.
Yeah.
I find that I encourage my kids with sort of dictation type activities prior to that. Like I give them, you know, a tray with sand or flour or something in it, and they can draw pictures or make letters in it or whatever. Or something that's easy to write with, you know, you make letters out of Play-Doh or finger paint or something like that. You know, they can mess around with letters in a sense, right?
Yeah.
But if they are interested and they're holding a pencil, absolutely, it's just fun. You know, my youngest daughter was about, I don't think she was quite 4 when she started doing dictation, and she was quite, you know, good at letters and understood kind of the point of them and that age and all that.
Yeah.
And I think the first maybe 3 or 4 months of doing dictation, I would say, well, what would you like to write today? You know, would you like to do a poem, or would you like to, you know, write maybe the names of the people in your family, or, you know, just whatever interested her. Yeah. And so she would say, I want to write, I love mama. And so for every day for months, she wrote, I love mama.
That's so sweet.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So just take them where they're at. The idea is you take them where they're at, you move them forward a tiny bit, wherever the at is, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Man, my youngest boy might even be interested in that. He'll be 4 on Monday, and he'll get a pad of paper and a pencil, and he'll do math with his brothers. And it's really... I've seen him draw stick figures, that's his math, and just scribbles. And so, I mean, he might want to do short things.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you can get those little exercise books that are half blank on top and half lined on the bottom.
Yeah.
Those are great because if their letters are really wobbly, my kids used to just do it on the blank part. Like, they wouldn't try the lines.
Yeah.
You know, or sometimes I would draw a picture of whatever we were talking about. You know, so say she wanted to do her brother's name. You know, I want to write Isaac. You know, and I said, oh, should we make a picture of Isaac? And so she might draw a picture, I might draw a picture. And then we would write out the letters of his name, right? So.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can just have fun with it, right?
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm excited about tomorrow.
Oh, good.
Try some dictation. Okay. So then you said that, dictation is in place of all the language arts. Do you do poetry with your children? Do you have them recite?
Lots.
Okay. So dictation does not take the place of poetry? Or does it?
Dictation, whatever poem they say wanted to memorize and recite, we would start by doing that in dictation, right?
Okay.
Because it's hard to do dictation and not memorize it.
Right, you know? Right.
Because you're really taking a really close look at it. So if you do one line of a poem a day, you know, you're memorizing it, you're learning it, and you're learning what it means, which is really lovely, right? Because we wouldn't do a poem without talking about what it means, you know? So, and that I think is one of the most spectacular things about dictation is it really develops literate people, because you're looking at the technical aspect of language. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the, how to make language right, you know, how to make it proper, so that we can communicate effectively. But then you're getting micro vision. You're also getting this macro vision, is what does language mean? Mm-hmm. Okay. What is its purpose? What is its, what do we desire for language? You know, how does it help us as the human race, right? How does language affect us? And so, you know, you're doing that in the same lesson. You're doing it from the time they're very tiny, you know, like, ooh, how does that poem make you feel? You know, boy, that's kind of a good word. You know, that does that word, is that a creepy word or is it a happy word? You know, and what if we used it? What if the poet chose a different word? Like, say you're talking about, I'll just go back to the same poem, that a child should always say what's true. What if he said an adult should always say what's true? You know, and I mean, that's funny. Like, to a kid, that's going to be funny, you know, because they think we do say everything that's true.
Right, right.
You know, what if we said that? What do you think the poet would mean if he said an adult should always say what's true? Right. And, you know, so just having fun with that. And of course, that expands as they get older into, you know, the very deep symbolism and meaning in writing.
Yeah.
You know, so what a cool tool, and a very, very underused tool that we can look at the technical aspect of language and the beauty and purpose of language in the same 5-minute lesson, right? Yeah.
So then let's say that you're doing a poem and it's also part of dictation. Would you start with dictation and then maybe in a week turn it into a recitation?
Yeah, usually. Or I would say, you know, if I wanted them to memorize something, I would say, well, let's do that for dictation and you can memorize it. But we would probably say it together, the whole poem every day, you know, maybe we take turns. I say a line, you say a line, you know, we go back and forth. Or would you like me to say it so you can listen to it? Or would you like to try saying it out loud yourself? So it might become part of the dictation lesson in a sense, right? Yeah. Or we might do it outside of that as well. But it's probably just going to take place in context of the dictation lesson, right? Okay. Like, oh, yeah. You know, do you remember the first stanza? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I'm thinking, because my oldest is only 8, what happens in high school? Do they get longer? Like, will you dictate paragraphs for your child? Okay.
Yeah. Now, with my first few kids, I didn't continue on doing dictation in the same way that I did with my younger kids. Mm-hmm. Except one of my daughters, I continued for a long time because she did speech art. So she did a lot of memory work. So we did a lot of that via dictation, you know, even though she was in high school. But I've realized now the benefit. I would usually stop doing dictation when I could no longer challenge them, you know, so I could rattle off a paragraph and, you know, they basically would not have anything I needed to teach them, you know?
Yeah.
And then I realized that I wasn't accessing the full benefit of dictation in terms of talking more about the meaning and purpose of language, you know, and bringing that into a higher level, right? Mm-hmm. And choosing, you know, maybe much more sort of deep and meaningful passages, poetry, scripture, verses, than I might have chosen, you know, saints, quotes, things like that. Mm-hmm. What do they mean by that? How does that relate to my life? You know, and so it's really nice with my youngest daughter because we, you know, we talk about some pretty important things. So I wouldn't I would still keep the lesson to no more than 10 minutes. Okay.
Okay.
You know, because there's ample time to, if you're really looking at something really intensely, you're going to think about it for a long time. So a 5 or 10 minute lesson isn't really a 5 or 10 minute lesson, right? Because you're mm-hmm. looking at it really intensely and then you're processing, right? Mm-hmm. You're thinking about it. And so, you know, I probably wouldn't do more than a few sentences at a time, even with a high schooler. You know, I'm not going to go over, say, 10 minutes. So that might be 3, 4, 5 sentences, depending on, you know, how fast they write.
Okay.
And of course, high schoolers are going to be improving their penmanship too through that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, because last week we talked about how your routine changes pregnant and postpartum.
Right.
And dictation to me seems like a simple, cozy thing. Do you continue doing dictation throughout pregnancy and postpartum?
I do. There's a lot of other things that I would, you know, sort of not spend the time on. But that's something that I did. The only time I ever stopped doing dictation, and I got the kids to do copy work. And the only reason I did was because I wanted to not lose the placeholder, because we were in such a good rhythm with it. I didn't want it to be sort of like, oh, it was, you know, getting back into that habit. So I got them to do copy work. Was I've mentioned to you, after I had my last baby, I got very, very sick, and I was sick for a long time. I was sick for about 18 months. I had to have an emergency surgery and all kinds of stuff. It was bad. I had to have a bowel resection, actually. That's what was going on. So it was a long recovery period.
Okay.
And so for the first couple of months after that, I would just write something out for copy work, or the older kids give them something and say, just, you know, do this couple of sentences or do this paragraph, just as a placeholder, because I didn't really feel there was a lot of value other than, you know, penmanship and looking at something that was a work mm-hmm. that you could, you know, a valuable piece of writing,
right?
You know, looking at it and reading it. But I just feel like you can just milk so much more out of language via dictation, and it's so short. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would absolutely be something that I would continue doing, because it's really nice, and almost even more important. You know, when I was pregnant, I would, you know, I felt sick and I gross and tired and all of that. And it's harder to be nice, you know, it was much harder to be nice. And so this is a moment where I think, okay, this was what matters. And this few minutes with you is going to, you know, fill your tank, right?
Yeah.
So often we are in a position where when we're doing school with our kids, what we're basically doing is emptying their tank as we're, teaching them or getting them to do the thing they're supposed to do. And then we have to rebuild, refill afterwards. Well, dictation, you completely avoid all that, right? You're teaching them and filling their tank at the same time, right? Because it's friendly, you know, it's not the sort of pop quiz method at all. It's discussion,
right?
You know?
Right. So I think this will be the last question.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's very, very, it doesn't matter, but I'm curious. Do you sit with your kids on the couch for this cozy learning with dictation, or do you require sitting at a table?
That's a great question, actually. Normally I sit at it. We don't sit at desks or anywhere, kitchen table homeschoolers, you know, but I have a desk space that's mine, and it's mostly because all my resources are there, right? And I want them to easy to access. And so for me, I like to sit and do dictation with my kids at that table, right? And so that way I have my, you know, if I need to look something up, if I need to look up a spelling word, or if I need to look up, how we use this particular type of punctuation, or what's another poem this poet wrote, I want to have my resources really close to me. And that would be harder for me to do on the couch, right? So that would definitely be a situation where I would mostly sit at the desk with them. However, if I had just had a baby and I was sitting, you know, and when I say just had a baby, I'm not doing schoolwork with my kids immediately postpartum. I just, you know, it's just time to soak up that baby for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, we just have to let go of fussing about that. If you took 2 weeks off or a month off or 6 months off, it wouldn't matter, right? If you had a really fussy baby, just don't beat yourself up, you know, because you need to spend time with the baby and spend time with the kids so that, you know, life is just flowing more smoothly. It's just not going to harm your kids at all. If they're living in a rich learning environment, you know, they're going to be just fine. And so that might be a time when I would say, can you bring your dictation book to the couch so I can nurse the baby?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, that's all the questions I have.
Okay.
And I
think that's good.
We covered a lot.
Yeah, we covered a lot. Yeah. And that might actually spark some more questions if people want to sort of have a closer look at, you know, dictation and what it does. I'm going to I have some videos on YouTube, and I have some lots of blog posts about dictation and how it looks, and some of them with sort of sample pictures in it. I have a book on, actually grab it. It was the first book I wrote. You're probably seeing a mirror image, but this dictation, this is an editing copy, so it's got writing on the front. It was the first book I wrote because I felt dictation was so foundational to how I approached education with my kids on every other front that I thought, this is the first thing I need to get my ideas down in a really cohesive way. But I do have a lot of that information via blog posts as well, so I'll put those in the show notes for sure.
Okay.
So if you guys have questions, if that sparks more questions, we're still getting questions in from people on various fronts. So you can email me via my website, bonnielandry.ca. You could put them in the YouTube comments. Most people are finding me on Facebook, Make Joy Normal, and sending me a private message, but you can put it up as a post as well. And thank you all of those who have submitted questions. We will just keep addressing them and sometimes compiling them into sort of thematic topics like today's. And just keep those coming.
Thank you.
We'll be on YouTube and on our podcast here as well.
Thank you.
All right. So good night, Elizabeth.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay. Talk soon.